let's I guess get into the news of the day.
And okay.
We were talking a little bit before we came on the air, and I've kind of had this enlightenment, for lack of a better word, lately. When Donald Trump was first elected, I think everybody was concerned that he would consolidate power and never leave office.
Yes.
Which was a valid concern. I mean, and he's still talking about all the elections were rigged, and if they didn't have mail-in voting, I'd have won California. I mean, he's still making that argument today. But I think the idea of a third term, I mean, he'll put on a hat or something just to tweak people. But I think he's given up on that. What he had, so he has shifted his focus. He's understanding that he will not have unlimited power, but he may have unlimited wealth.
Oh, he is such a, it is becoming much, much more apparent.
I mean, yes, the graph
the kind
is
of illegal trades and investments and things. I mean, there's evidence that he is engaging.
But honestly, it's been
insider trading.
Right, right. No, obvious evidence.
Stuff.
I mean, that's why it's so out in the open, because he'll make these huge investments in a company, go out the next day, say nice things about the company, suggest that, you know, maybe the government should invest, or suggest that.
Yep,
and
its value skyrockets. This is so incredibly raw. What else can you say about it?
But that seems pedestrian.
By comparison with what came down yesterday.
Yes.
And we all know about, I don't know if we all do, but the Justice Department is to settle Donald Trump's $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS, claiming that they damaged his reputation or something. He had no actual damage, but a contract employee had leaked some of his tax records and had done it with some others. That's a violation of privacy law, but every other person for whom that happened, tried to bring a lawsuit and had their lawsuits tossed out. Not Donald Trump.
Well,
they have left that lawsuit go forward, and so they've cut this to compensate Trump in return to get him to drop that lawsuit. The Justice Department has created $1.7 billion or $1.8 billion fund.
Well, let's be specific, and there's for a reason for it.
Okay.
It's a $1.776 billion.
That's what I've read.
And that's all a nod and a wink to QAnon, is my understanding. I have no idea what it signifies. I mean, to the folks who are waiting around Dealey Plaza for JFK to come back, that's for them.
Oh, I didn't realize that, but it's a specific meeting to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, 1776.
Well, we all know.
Yeah.
So I guess Trump is Paul Revere now, or I. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the whole.
Bring you the burden of your money. So there will be a group of five who will determine how this fund is spent. They'll listen to various claims. They're appointed by the president. They can be removed by the president.
No, by the attorney general.
And by the attorney general.
They're appointed by the attorney.
Oh, they're appointed by the. Yes. Well, but the attorney general does.
It's a technical.
But you're right, it's a technical. Yes, it's a technicality. And that is, there's no transparency at all in who gets the money and why. When senators ask if the money could go to the January 6th rioters who were convicted of assaulting police officers, the acting attorney general Blanche said there's no limits on who can file a claim. They'll put a quarterly report about the fund's expenditures to the attorney general, but that's the accountability. That's all the accountability we Americans have for our tax dollars going out.
Right.
Now, they can't go to Trump and his family, but they will go to his allies. They will go to his army of supporters to reassure them, to reward them for their loyalty and reassure them that he has their back if they want to break the law again.
And you would think that, well, let's just go to the courts. This has to be illegal. But my understanding is because the money's coming from the taxpayers, nobody has standing.
Yeah.
So
unless we as a collective country, we'll prove the standing in November. That's all you could do is at the ballot box, because there's no accountability at all. There's no ability to bring a lawsuit to stop this. It's just all and Trump has this long history with taxes. But another thing that was slipped in here kind of inconspicuously.
Before we get off this, I just want to make clear that all of this is for somebody leaking what he told us 6 years ago, I'll release as soon as the audit's over.
Yep.
And so for you to believe that lie, you would have to believe that for the entire 4 years that he was in office the first term, that audit was continuing. He let that audit continuing. The man who is now suing the IRS for $1.776 billion because the audit was released allowed that audit to continue during his entire first term.
Yeah, that's a very good
point. In order to believe that lie.
Yeah.
So.
And he had promised in 2015 to release his taxes. He had promised in 2016. He had promised in 2021.
But every one of those was, I'll do it. The only reason I can't, and everybody knows
when
you're under audit, everybody knows when you're under audit, you can't release your taxes. Well, nobody knows that, but okay.
Yeah. But yeah, because that's not the truth.
It's nothing. Yeah.
So then, and this has been a big battle with the House Ways and Means Subcommittee in his first term. They'd filed a lawsuit to get that information, citing a legitimate legislative purpose. And Trump countersued, a federal judge dismissed him, allowing the returns to be released. It was appealed to the Supreme Court, you might remember. Trump was claiming an absolute presidential immunity. Well, this Supreme Court has been extremely friendly to this administration, but they didn't go that far. So that he did release, they had to publicly release the documents that in answer to this subpoena to the House, and then once the House got them, they released them in December of 2022. Of course, immediately we have a new Republican House in January of 23, and it's not interested in its tax returns. So what things never really went anywhere.
And let's be honest, even if we saw them, it wouldn't have made a difference. I mean, the people who saw that Access Hollywood tape weren't going to vote against him because of anything in his tax returns.
You're right. That is true. And I think one of the reasons, and of course, if you're not releasing your tax returns, does that mean there's something to hide? I mean, that's what he accused Mitt Romney of back in 2014.
Oh, that's so quaint.
Do you remember that?
You're holding Donald Trump to the same standards that we held Mitt Romney to.
But I thought, no, Trump himself said that to Mitt Romney.
I think
that's so bizarre. He told Obama, if you release your birth certificate, I'll release my taxes. And Obama released his birth certificate a week later and still no. There's got to be something in there. And I know that that's why the state of New York was really interested in his tax documents, because this was the Cirrus Vance after the hush money case with Stormy Daniels and the 34 felony counts. Cyrus Vance in New York City wanted to investigate the Trump Organization for fraud, for cooking the books, for filing false tax statements, for claiming loans that were, I mean, all of these kind of financial
shenanigans. But he's been convicted of all that.
What's that?
He's already been convicted of all of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that was, that was at the state level. And then the New York wanted to go specifically on the tax product.
I just think all that's old, that's BT before Trump. We are living in the AT. We're living in a whole new era where there is no shame.
And you could see that in the Department of Justice decision slipped sort of inconspicuously into this fund, the statement that Donald Trump, his family, and his companies have absolute immunity from any IRS audits.
Yeah.
They will not. There is now the language that forever that Donald Trump is the IRS is forever banned from auditing Donald Trump, those of his family, company, or related companies. This is astonishing. I don't know why I'm continuing to be astonished.
Right. It is all right there. There's no attempt to hide any of this. But I go back to the Bitcoin, at the very beginning where he put his face on a Bitcoin, made $1 zillion. And everybody just, that's cool. Everybody looked the other way. Qatar wants to give him a luxury jet. That's cool. Yeah.
I know.
It's going to cost us millions of dollars to convert it, but that's cool. One grift after another. And
I think you're right. It's not power he's after. It's enormous wealth.
Right.
He wants to be the richest person in the world.
And recognition. He wants his name on every monument, on every government document, on every government piece of paper that somebody will look at. He wants his name on it. He wants his face on it. It is a neediness that we've never, ever, ever seen.
This is psychopathic.
It is.
Neediness, yeah.
And so, obviously, he knows, everybody knows, that he'll get the Republicans are going to lose power in the midterm election, and he'll have 2 years of investigations and all of that. So he's making, the sun shines.
Yeah, that's really what I think. Yeah. I sometimes am speechless. Never speechless, but this will make me speechless.
Well, if you're looking for anything in history, in our history, to compare it to, I mean, there's lots of things in other countries' history to compare it to, but not ours.
Yeah, it would even be up there for other countries. I mean,
it's typical.
Dictators go after power.
It really is.
And they'll, the Shah of Iran was a real grifter with his family got very rich.
Well, yeah, but putting your statue and your name everywhere, and that's real.
But this is gold-plated.
Well, this is Trump. That's right. Everything is good. But that's no different than these third-world countries where you go in there and they have these gilded palaces and the people are all starving to death.
Because they seem they think that shows how powerful they are. And I think maybe the people think that shows God's special hand on.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe anointing them. This is the anointed leader. Well, the other thing, unless we want to continue.
No, let's shift gears.
Depressing topic. Let's talk artificial intelligence. You did a very nice piece. I thought that a op-ed in the Bulletin recently. I liked your comparison of the fatalism of those of us who grew up fearing an atomic war with the Soviet Union, like you. I recall duck and cover under my desk to protect us kids from radioactive fallout. No wonder we were a pessimistic generation and a fatalistic generation. And it's not just us as an older generation suspicious of AI. You quoted this recent Yahoo/YouGov poll that found 53% of Americans believe it's either somewhat likely or very likely that AI will destroy humanity. Now, that's some existential terror right there.
Well, I don't think that's ridiculous to think that.
Yeah.
Because we know that it's going to have devastating impacts on jobs, but we've been through the industrial age and we've been through that kind of transformation before. This is closer, I think, to the atomic weapon, where
It shifts the ground under our feet culturally, socially, economically, politically. It will have an impact on democracy. It will have an impact on culture. It's not simply on workforce. That is true.
But I think the biggest concern is when we lose control of the bombs. And the death rays or whatever comes after the bombs. Because all of these war scenarios, it gets to a point where a human says, no, we're not going to, and the machine says, yeah, we got to win. And if you're programmed to think the only thing you got to do is win, and you don't have.
Yes, 95% of the time AI in these war games will opt, if it looks like in these simulations we're going to lose, they drop an atomic bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
They go nuclear.
Right. And so that's
there are no cooler heads
the biggest
to prevail.
Fear. Yeah. Right, right. And
now you compared it to China where AI is integrated more into everyday life. So you don't have the fatalism there? Or what are you saying about China when you mention that?
I guess what I'm saying is the attitude in this country is it is a race between us and China. And whoever gets there first will dominate.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we can't worry about government oversight and putting restrictions and shackles on the innovators and all that language that you hear.
Mm-hmm.
If we in any way try to hold
the technology back,
right,
or accountable, or
we will fall behind China, and they will be our overlords. I mean, that's kind of taking it to its extreme.
Yeah, yeah, I think you are right because that is certainly. Well, I was reading a little bit more about this. I kept running into these boosters, Elon Musk and Sam Altman, and those guys. We're going to have this rosy future. We don't even have to save for retirement anymore. things are going to cost less. There'll be like scientific and medical breakthroughs. I mean, it's so pie in the sky that we could just relax and trust them.
Yeah.
For everything.
I think all of those things are going to be true. I think we will have medical breakthroughs. I think this will. You know, one of the obvious things to me, they in law enforcement when they caught the pipe bomber.
Yes,
that was all AI. You know, they start with this tiny little nugget. I forget what it was, but okay, we have this piece of information, and instead of humans going through logs, AI does that,
and very rapidly.
Yeah,
so it can really. I think. One of the things that we need to do is to prepare. We know very well, and these boosters will also admit that millions of jobs will be lost in the next few years, possibly the next few months. I mean, they're really upfront about that.
Well,
and that's hugely dislocating for our society. So at minimum, we need to be thinking about how do we address the needs of the workforce? How do we address ordinary Americans facing this new development? Good article yesterday in The Guardian, economic journalist Stephen Greenhouse. I don't know if you took a look at it, but he was presenting several good proposals, just interesting proposals to offset some of that economic displacement. And one would be a guaranteed health insurance for everyone. And that, of course, puts us in line with every other industrial nation. So workers displaced by AI won't at least worry about losing health insurance.
And even then, I mean, why do we have to insist on doing that through the free market system and with health insurance? Why don't we just make health care available?
That's what they're going to do. That's his proposal, is basically make it universal, guaranteed. Wage insurance for those whose jobs are displaced, and that includes a generous unemployment benefit. He pointed out that in some states, unemployment insurance benefits right now run less than $300 a week, maybe $230 in Mississippi, and that's just criminal. So that you would be increasing that. He suggested a public works program a la New Deal that would create millions of jobs. Yep. We have a failing old aging infrastructure. We could work on that. We could use it for child care. We could do it for American workers for all kinds of things that the company needs. And the market would be too slow in responding to that. The market is not the mechanism to use to respond to this. Immediate job training. We already can anticipate the loss, so let's get people trained. Let's create programs already. Sharing AI productivity gains with the workers, including lowering the work week to 32 hours at the same pay as the old 40 hours, and mandated paid vacations for workers. And that's not radical stuff either. That's something that the 27 member EU guarantees 4 weeks of paid vacation to workers. 4 weeks of paid vacation. Now we have jobs where you have no paid vacation.
Well, and that's because we have no. The private sector has lost so much of its union labor force.
Yes, yes.
And the public sector still has a union labor force, but the private sector does not.
No, and you're really vulnerable.
Yeah. So you're powerless. You're absolutely powerless.
It's just you as an individual, not a collective. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then they also said he also proposed a universal basic capital for all Americans, essentially giving us a stake in AI industry.
Yeah.
So we would have corporate voting rights and a voice in running the corporations that do AI. So I thought that was a really
that is. I mean, he's thinking about it. I don't know if some of that seems a little bit. No, not really. I mean, I've always had a problem with that the concept of basic income. Because there have in the past been jobs available for most people, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be true. It just isn't in the next 10 years.
Gosh, in the next few years, fewer 5
than
years.
Yeah, you're right.
I think this is really this is what's going to be very dislocating. And I can't help but think about Karl Marx and the writings about the lumpen proletariat, the people that are so crushed by capitalism. You know, that then they're the ones that then end up eventually having, turning toward revolution. I mean, we're setting it up if we're not careful
and
how this is accomplished.
And that was, I guess, what to me was so disconcerting with the debate we just had over SNAP, food assistance.
Yeah.
we are still hearing Republicans do the same old thing, that everybody getting food assistance are, you know, slacker kids living in their parents' basements playing video games all day long. And that stereotype is...
It used to be the welfare mother, the welfare queen,
that's right,
in the Reagan
that's right,
years.
Right.
But there's always been some boogeyman
that's
out there
exactly
that's
right.
cheating hardworking Americans.
Yeah, that's right.
Just to get food. And it's so false. Most of the people on SNAP are elderly or infirm or children. I mean...
And so what they went to is the what they, you know... Okay, well, we'll give you food. We'll give you food, but it has to be apples and it has to be bananas. No candy. No. Okay.
Yeah. The nanny state. Yeah.
I know. So yeah, that was discouraging to me. I mean, I'm thinking, here we are all these years later, and we're still giving these Ronald Reagan arguments about picking yourself up from the bootstraps and.
Yes, and if you don't have boots.
Yeah, you know.
It is really. I don't think. Those who subscribe to these, you know, really hard nose what they think is realism, realize the adverse impact it could eventually have, how it could really upset the entire apple cart if they don't pay a little more attention to large swaths of the lower middle class. There might be benefits for the people at the very bottom, and plus the people at the very bottom might not feel that they have the political efficacy to change anything. Sometimes they don't even have a permanent address. Maybe they're living in a tent or... At Camp Hope or something, but the lower middle class is the one that's going to be hurt the worst, and there are a large number of Americans, and then regular middle class are going to be slipping into lower middle class, and that's going to lead to a lot of disgruntled anger.
Yeah,
and justifiably so.
And it's going to be interesting to see which political party addresses that issue.
Yeah,
in the past you would say it would be the Democrats, but I think they have focused. They've gotten off focus a little bit on the economic issues, and they've focused more on the social issues sometimes, and that has allowed Republicans to make inroads with the working class.
I know
that I think Donald Trump is feathering away, but there's not a whole lot of evidence at the local level yet. I mean, the Republicans are still winning local races, and But that is going to be the challenge for the government of the next 10 years, because that is going to be a massive transformation. And as we sit here right now, we're not ready for it.
Yep. And that's one reason why we voters need to be thinking about it and looking at our candidates. We've got an early election going on right now, the early polling for the primary stage. The actual election date is June 5th, I believe. But there's a lot of polling places that are open, and you can already take a look. And if you haven't voted in the past, you have friends and loved ones who have not, the only way to do it is to vote, to run for office, to, you know, donate to causes that are important. But this is something that we can't ignore.
And we only have 2 minutes. I'm going to take the last 2 minutes.
Yes.
Oh, we have a caller. I was going to give a pitch for the constitutional amendment. We need to pass the constitutional amendment to pay our legislators.
Yes.
So I got my pitch in. Caller, we only have a couple of minutes, so you're going to have to be quick. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I want to bring it back to the local level. I want the audience to know that on the work session – at the beginning of May, the city decided about a new GO bond or general obligation bond.
Uh-huh.
And I believe everybody should look at this Ponzi scheme, because if you can't have just one option, you have to have two options, as they explained it to the city councilors, then I think that Mr. Algernon's article in the Journal concerning the deep debt of the city expenses versus revenue is really important as to whether or not you should vote for this GO bond.
Okay.
And I think everybody should pay attention, because you guys are talking about the big picture with the world. Well, Donald Trump, he's going to make everyone's life very unhappy in the next couple of months. So be prepared.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Yeah,
thank you.
You caught us right at the end of the half hour, but thank you for jumping in. And that is, the Go Bond is on the ballot as well, and we don't have a lot of time to get into that. We will take a break right now, and when we come back, we will turn things over to the FFA debaters, and they'll be talking about AI and its impact on agriculture. We'll be back in just a minute.